Welcome everyone to part 2 of my chat with Fabrice Guerrier on the Caribbean Science Fiction Network.
For the people of Haiti, dealing with disaster on so many different levels, and someone from me, like me, from Trinidad and Tobago, we've never had to deal with those kinds of disasters before. How does it allow you to engage in a deeper or different way to someone who hasn't lived there?
That is an extremely profound question. And I feel like a lot of it, I think, for me, has to do with intergenerational trauma and how trauma is passed down through stories. Trauma is locked inside our DNA and our genes. How trauma also expresses itself through the words, the imaginations, and the mythologies that we carry inside ourselves, and how we negotiate those spaces with other people. I think being Haitian specifically in the context of disaster has, I think there is a cliche and there's a sort of a fetishization of like, okay, we've been through hardship, so now we're resilient. Yeah. We're resilient people. I want to push away from that sort of like that framework. Yeah. But I feel like for me, the way that I see sort of the Haitian people and me being from Haiti and how it relates to intergenerational trauma, I think it's like I see a people that is trying to understand it, their own power,
yeah,
and what they represent for the planet, like what they represent for the history of humanity in the age of revolutions, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, and then the Haitian Revolution. I feel like in Haiti, there's like a celestial battle that's happening. Mm. Like, I don't know how else to put it. I think on all dimensions, there is a sort of, at the source of creation, there is a celestial battle happening in Haiti. And I feel like overall, this sort of power and this magic that the Haitian people have and how they've sort of been able to kind of free themselves and imagine possible futures outside of the current model of our planet.
Yeah.
I feel like that is extremely intense. That is extremely intense. Though I do have to say, I think being Haitian, I feel like we're a very artistic people. And I think art and mythology and creativity is being used at this very moment as a mean to exist, as a mean to recenter themselves, and as a mean to not sort of like, how do I say this, sort of the fetish of disaster, sort of the what is it, disaster capitalism, this sort of, there's a narrative around that. I think they're people full of dignity, but oftentimes I think that intergenerational trauma manifests itself through the sort of dynamics of the society and the class warfare and the legacies of the past still playing over and over, like the assassinated president that happened 2 years ago, the gang warfare right now. I've been writing a lot about, I'm a columnist for Haiti Observateur, and it's a small newspaper that's based in Brooklyn. And they are the oldest newspaper outside of Haiti. And it was formed by Raymond Joseph during the Duvalier as a way to kind of go against the Duvalier era, the dictatorship. But specifically, my writing deals with Haitian futurism. And for me, I sort of imagine this idea and trying to understand what it means for us to imagine ourselves outside and beyond the future. How do we carry the spirit of the revolution? I say that Haitian futurism began when Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who was the founder of the Haiti, the Haitian state, declared that the land, no matter what of your background, ethnicity, and wherever you are at, around the world, you, when you come here on this land, you're free. And in mind you, because a lot of that time was a time of slavery. So it's like black bodies enslaved and other people were dealing with a lot of incomprehensible pain and suffering. So I feel for me, when I look at this sort of very futuristic vision of like rights and freedom and justice and liberation, it expands itself throughout history, where you see a lot of people in America in the 1900s would Haiti was like considered like a haven for black people, like a Mecca. And I feel like there's a lot of things. I think this is, again, this is a battle of narratives. And that this is where my hesitation to kind of claim the idea of disaster. It is unfortunate that disaster strikes Haiti, but I do feel like this disaster is part of a bigger celestial battle that's happening that I as a human being that I might never ever understand, because it's beyond me. It's in the other world. But I would not want to condemn or fatalize the life of Haitians and strip them away of their dignity and their vision and their magic and their creativity and what this sort of this Haitian project of liberation that started in 1804, because I think it's still playing today and we have not seen how it's going to manifest yet. So I feel like for me, a lot of what, to answer what you're saying, a lot of it has manifested through sort of this exploration of what Haitian futurism mean and kind of shifting the conversation of disaster, the conversation of suffering, the conversation of pain. And I know, like, and there's a lot of, and one of the pieces I wrote, I think it was like Leopold Senghor and Aimé Césaire, and they were talking about the idea of negritude and how that can be a way to kind of coalesce the sort of the black imagination together. And I think it was Senghor that said, like, if people don't have food in their bellies, it doesn't really matter if negritude is a liberatory vision. And I think that's a critique you always hear. So I for me, I do feel like there is great power in exploring futurity, localized futurity, within the context of the Haitian vision of liberation. So for me, my response is like, I think the Haitian people are very futuristic people, but oftentimes in the West, we see the narrative of like the economy and democracy and the chaos and the madness of the media.
You mentioned mythology as a means to recenter, and let's talk about your novel, Medusa's Descendant. How you came to write this novel, and where does it fit your view of Haitian futurism, as well as using mythology as a means to recenter?
So there's a bigger works of fiction that I've been working on, specifically that's tied to the history of Haiti. And for me, the way that I see stories, I see a world first. I'm a world builder first, so I see world building as like a liberatory process. So I think when I first started working on Le Cap, and around that time, I started to see a more broader fantastical world with the different deities and the different sort of frameworks and magic and spaceships, all of these different ways of being were sort of syncretized into a world. And Medusa's Descendant specifically, for some strange reason, I've always been pulled by the story of Medusa as a sort of like representing sort of femininity. And I think for me, my direct impact here, like I really wanted to sort of, because you see a lot of like the West takes on a lot of like African or Asian or indigenous deities or mythologies or stories and then westernizes it and then capitalize on it. So I think for me, I wanted to sort of subvert this sort of Western vision of Medusa and reclaim it for me within a sort of Haitian context to sort of explore like Black female rage. And in a society where there's so much conversation about Black women who are facing the brunt of like this sort of the racial, like our racial past and the racial past. And I feel like for me, Medusa holds such a symbolic power in our the Western society and also just our global world that I wanted to retake it. And I think specifically the Gorgons as like when we look at the Greek deities, I would have to go more in depth into the world building because the world is not out fully yet because there's like so many different types of stories that I've just kind of kept in. But the Gorgons specifically are like an ancient race of beings that are connected to, this is in the world, that are connected to the sky god Dembala and the Haiti-verse world. And they're going to play a role in the second book, the second novel in the context of like that Haitian history and the revolution. But specifically, Emilia doesn't know her past. And she is born in this world that I've created within the Medusa descendants is specifically, it is the future world of that earlier time where the Haitians have centered the planet, where they have the magic and they have the power and they've been able to kind of claim their dignity. And for the US specifically, it's the 13 colonies. So it's a different fictional world that gets started in New York, in that 13 colony, in a very futuristic science fantasy world, where she is, she wakes up in the middle of a corridor, and suddenly, she starts running and she doesn't know who she is. She doesn't have control over her power. And turns a group of people into stone, and now she's a fugitive. But she's by faith, she's taken in into a group, a family that is predominantly Haitian. That kind of starts to tell her a little bit more about her past, in her power, and sort of kind of teach her how to use sort of her magic. And I think specifically, this is. When I conceived of Medusa's Descendant, I think I wanted to look at it from more a serial basis. And I kind of left the story on like, okay, this future right now where I'm recentering Haiti and Haitian vision and mythology, they've created the Haitian Galactic Federation where they have sort of, they're the sort of the federal governance that binds the interplanetary travels between the systems, and they're able to use their magic but also science to bring those things together. But there's a very deep mystery to her past because and I don't want to say too much because the Gorgons race was very antagonistic to the revolution and the revolution that happens in the novel. So I'm kind of bringing her as like a heroine that's kind of exploring her power and then kind of uncovering the choice that she has, because out of everyone, she has the power to kind of challenge a lot of the old gods that have kind of sustained the power in the world. So I think for me, it's almost subverting Western mythologies on its head and kind of claiming it for my own. And I always look at the illusion of like a Black woman in their dreads as like very snake-like. And there's stuff I found also over the internet that claims the whole Gorgon story was also was an African myth. I can't find that specifically in terms of quote unquote Western research and truth, but like I have seen that online where they talk about the similarities in the conversations around like the Gorgon race. So there's many layers to it. I think a lot of my, at least this era of my writing is like, how do I look at young Black people and who are coming into their power and what are the struggles for them to accept that power and find their voice and use that force for good, or use that force for an improbable thing that could potentially make the world very different than what it was before.
You mentioned magic and science, and I wanted to find out a little more about that. How do those two things come together as a writer? What does Haitian magic and science look like for you as a writer?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think for me, I don't make the differentiation between like my ancestors or different types of futures or different types of timelines or different types of identities, yeah, or different types of synchronicities or different types of sensing these sort of fantastical forces of nature. I think a lot of these things are imbued in the way that I naturally think of the world. And I think most of my life, I think I've fought those things because science, yeah, and I think there's a whole movement of like decolonizing science and this sort of notion of progress as like very antagonistic to sort of indigenous or African tribal sort of, yeah, visions of the world. So I think for me,
yeah,
I don't necessarily see it as a difference, but I do feel like in, yeah, this sort of, in this rich coalescing wisdom system inside of me of identities, I do feel like there is a scientist that kind of sees very hypothetical. There's a hypothesis and we're going to test it and we're going to see if there's material actions that happen. But I also feel like, mm-hmm, there's even a profound force that is my soul, and my soul that's like at all times kind of senses things very differently. So I would say that at least for me, the way I kind of see it is that like, it's almost as if it's like the science seems to, it's not caught up yet to the magic in a way, yeah, where it's like,
yeah,
maybe it might never catch up to the magic in a way. But I kind of see that, I see science and magic in that fantastical sense as very sort of, I would say very, very similar. But I do feel like there are preconditions and there are, there is a sort of body of work and there is a sort of a cognitive geography of science that like lends itself to a very sort of like, a very like rigid way of like imbuing meaning in what's possible. Because as we know, like a lot of these scientific reports, they go into shelves. A lot of these books and these experts, things kind of just go. At least for me, I'm like, how do we synthesize these? So like, for example, I can give a little bit of example. This might change this topic a little bit, but there's another collective. There's many collectives at Syllable. And one collective is the One Humanity Collective, where we brought women writers from Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, Brazil, Los Angeles, Puerto Rico, Louisiana. And they're exploring, like now specifically this year, they're exploring climate issues. But like, we have monthly salons. During the program, they have monthly salons with experts, scientists, and people on the ground. And those people give them their experiences and they give their sort of the scientific, this is what's happening, this is what we see. And then they use their imagination and their magic to kind of imbue that in the world that they created, which the fictional world is like a futuristic world called One Humanity. It's kind of in the year 2080, 2070, kind of reimagining the world. But I kind of see it like that. I feel like we oftentimes, we as humans, we oftentimes want to separate things, want to see squares, box, and circles, but eventually, like everything is everything in a way, like the all is mine. And I feel like there is a connection. And I think through world building, I feel like those connections happen through the imaginations, those connections happen. And when those connections are made, both for the person that engages that world or the person, at least for me, when I create the world, or with other people or right in that world, I think that's the synthesis. That's where the rubber meets the road. It's like I'm pulling from an ocean of meaning of a world that is rich, and I'm bringing all these different aspects together to fashion out of that dust or that dirt people and meaning and stories and things that can actually have very much emotional, spiritual, political, economic, scientific shifts in people and how they see the world. So I see, like, I tend to not make the differentiation of science and magic, but people do insist on making the separation. People insist on making a lot of separation on a lot of different things on this planet. And I think that's what's causing a lot of crisis. And that's what's causing a lot of separation between each other.
Well, you passed the test. I was testing you. No, because I agree. I agree that it's, particularly for the Caribbean, it's hard to separate those two. So you did well. You did mention the Haitian Galactic Republic, I think, or the Federation. And just as a trope, though, because a federation is not uncommon in science fiction. I mean, Star Trek is built on the Federation. But as a, again, on the topic of Haitian futurism, how is that different? How is the Haitian Galactic Republic different as a trope in a uniquely Caribbean science fiction style?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at something. It's the Haitian Galactic Republic, which is an intergalactic republic federation. And I feel like, at least for me, I'm going to go back to Toni Morrison, where she was writing her first like story. And she said that she wrote, I think it was Beloved. Some people might be really angry. I don't know if that's her first story or not. But she wrote Beloved because she didn't see, that was the book she wanted to read. So I feel like a lot for me, like, I don't see Haitian mythology or Haitian like stories or Haitian centered worlds enough. At least I don't see them. I mean, I'm sure they exist because I know, like, I was doing some research on the Haitian Revolution, and it's like there's like 300 types of stories that have been written since like the 1800s. Hermetic stories like that are not necessarily known by people in France and Europe and the Caribbean. It's like you have, I think you have, what's his name? Aimé Césaire. He wrote a play, and you have Jared Walcott.
Yeah.
He wrote a play on Henri Christophe. And I feel like, at least for me, I wanted to imagine, like, what would the future of the world look like if, within the context of the magic and the science and that fantastical, I'm calling Haiti verse, that world that I created. In the world of the imagination, there's no wrong. There's no wrong answers. But I think the creative challenge is the synthesis of ideas. So it's like certain actions, certain groups of people, certain world events, certain aspects, like 1 second can be a billion years, like 10 years could be 1 second. Like there's time and space starts to sort of devolve. So I wanted to sort of imagine what would follow the stories that I wrote early on around the era of the revolution into the future. And it seemed that when Haiti is centered and have the sort of those magical weapons within the story, they would be a force that is able to kind of bring the planet together to kind of expand into outer space. So I think it's very different because it's centered around blackness, and it's centered around the Haitian like mythologies. Like the capital of Mars, I say is named after one of the heroes in the revolution, Cap Ouala Mall. So it's like it's very kind of imbued, and I'm still doing a lot of world building on it, but I think it's different because I had never seen it before. Within sort of my cultural flavor.
In terms of yourself making a unique contribution to CSF, where do you see that happening? the things that you bring that perhaps are underrepresented even throughout the Caribbean?
The first thing that pops in my brain is my work at Syllable, the publishing house and production house. I think is bringing writers together to imagine worlds, forming artist collectives, forming these tribes to work together and to publish works of fiction where they otherwise would never meet. They otherwise would not have the opportunity to do so. They otherwise wouldn't have a community. I think for me, the idea of community and the idea of collaboration and the idea of building new mythologies and synthesizing and the imagining space that the West so much has defined for us of what is possible, what is real, what is not real, what is power, what is not power, what is the good race, what is the bad race, what is race itself. So I think for me, my contribution, I would say, is it's a different way of looking at how we as artists can come together to protest and can come together to declare new manifestos, can come together to claim new futures and find a home in those worlds that can eventually lead us into right relationship with our society and people who are very different than us. So I think for me, that I would say is at the root is this sort of the idea of Syllable and challenging the classical view of writing as an individual form of writing and saying that right now we are in a time of deep crises, especially the Caribbean islands are facing climate issues and rising sea levels and a lot of different processes that are happening. And I feel like we need to band together. We need to, it seems like a brain number, but it's like we have to come together and we need to be less of individuals, more of a collective to start to imagine what is possible for us. And I totally agree. I think that there has been a sort of separation that language has done to us as people. I always say it's like, we're all the same people. We just came from the same, we're different slave ship, pretty much. And I feel like for me, I've definitely been influenced, and I'm kind of shifting the subject a little bit, but I've definitely been influenced by the French sort of canon of thought. Like, I've definitely been influenced by Albert Camus, Albert Camus, Jacques Derrida, Roland Barthes, Sartre. I think all of these sort of existentialists or these post-structuralists, these individuals that also inspired so much of like Frantz Fanon's sort of vision of colonial worlds. I feel like for me, I don't see my existence in a vacuum. Yeah. I see my existence in conversations with the people that came before me. And whether they're French, whether they're white or black or Spanish, I see ideas as being alive. And those ideas live through us and they want to sort of manifest themselves. And I think bringing people together for me is the best way to kind of bring ideas to the next stage of their sort of expression. So they can sort of bring us closer towards a more justful, more nuanced, more beautiful, or more complex world. And I feel like for me, when you ask that question, I think there was a little bit of anxiety that rose, but I think I'm just getting started. I feel like I haven't really, and maybe it's my own personal journey as an artist and kind of claiming my voice, my power. I feel like I want to make more contribution. I want to do more for the Caribbean world and our planet. And I want to do more. I think the future has yet to sort of, it's still unfolding in a way.
We're at the end, but do you want to leave us with anything? I know you're working. You contributed a foreword to a collection. Do you want to say something about that in closing?
Yeah, absolutely. A collective that was formed at Sulubu is the Sauti Collective.
Right.
And the Sauti Collective is 10 African writers from five different African nations, from Ghana, South Africa, Nigeria, Zimbabwe. I might be mixing the countries, but they've created a very fantastical world, very similarly to the Caribbean. So our process at Sulubu is that we get people together, we form artist collectives, and then they create a world that's kind of anchored through a story Bible. And then that world grows through the stories that are created from that world. Mm-hmm. And then the original creators can invite writers and artists and musicians and different people from different mediums to come in that world and to start to imagine with the people with everyone in that collective. So Sauti was imagined to, how do we create a world, a fantastical science fiction fantasy world by Africans for Africans? And I think for me, the way that I see this is, I think there's always been this sort of, I don't want to say there's a disconnect between Afrofuturism and African futurism.
Yeah.
But I feel like for me, I see world building as like the synthesis of all these different movements that are rising. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the Sauti Collective is at the forefront of a lot of these movements.
Yeah.
And a lot of the writers are emerging, are established and have published works, and they're in conversation in their own communities, and they're releasing the first anthology that's going to be published by Android Press called Mother Sound. And I wrote the foreword for it. And I'm so excited for it because I was there in the beginning, like reaching out to Brittle Paper Magazine and Dr. Inyando, and then we brought in Wole Talabi, and us three kind of put our minds together to see what could an artist collective look like. Yeah. And the artist collective happened. And I think a lot over months of collaborations and ideation, there was a lot of synthesizing of African spirituality, African magic, African science, African history, a lot of sort of different strands of thought, new languages, creating an entire new language, creating an entire new magic system based on sound. It's a five planet system and two stars. And there's a history that spans over a million years in Sauti. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And I see this, I see Sauti, the moment it was established, I could feel it. I dream of Sauti, which is the name of the start of the beginning of it. And I'm writing a story in Sauti right now. And a lot of the writing is just kind of creating time and space for it. But yeah. I see Sauti evolving over the next 10, 20 years, just like the Caribbean Sky Islands, just like the One Humanity world. I think those worlds are spaces where writers and artists and intellectuals and experts and people from all across of life can come together to imagine something that's radically different than our world, and in a very radical sense, very close to our world, so we can have that sort of emotional, psychic impact to inspire people towards something different. So I'm really excited to see their first book out, and I highly recommend going on the syllable.com website, syllble.com, and you can go /worlds. You'll see all our worlds, and Sauti has their story Bible that you can read. And there's also an origin story that was also created.
Fabrice, we had quite a conversation. I'm really happy that we were able to do this. You've given us also a lot to think about, and I feel like we've also just scratched the surface of these stories in Golden Veins in particular. So I really encourage everyone listening to check it out. So Fabrice, any final words?
I feel like my final words is like, I have like so many questions for you, like in your journey as like a, and maybe we could follow up in a different thing, but just like to learn more about your process of like, how has your perception shifted meeting and engaging different Caribbean science fiction writers? How does science play a role in your magic, in your understanding of your upbringing, in your PhD in the Western world? Like, I feel I have so many, I think my final thoughts are like more curiosity of your story and like your experience as well.
Listen, I ask the questions here. No, we'll definitely chat about that. What I will say though is it has really, really expanded. I mean, you've offered these nuggets. You mentioned the Haitiverse or the Haitian verse? Haitiverse.
Yeah, the Haitiverse.
Yeah, the Haitiverse. Oh my gosh, that alone is a concept. Just allows me to dial in on the specificity within the Caribbean. So that's just one prime example of how my perception has broadened to accommodate individual writers from within the Caribbean who are just doing unique things that nonetheless add to what it means to be Caribbean. And it's just showing me, just affirming for me that the Caribbean is so much more and so boundless in what it contains and in the possibility that is yet to come. So I'll just leave it at that, because I really want this show to be about the writers and you. So Fabrice, thanks again so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
And for everyone listening, thank you as well. Continue to stay tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.